Are you a first responder? At Husqvarna, we support the uniformed men and women who serve our country and communities. As a way to honor your service, we created the Military and First Responder Appreciation Program. As a first responder, you qualify for a discount on your purchase of Husqvarna powered equipment. Get 10% off select commercial products at participating dealers. Whether you're starting a business or maintaining your property, you can count on Husqvarna. Find out why we're the brand that's trusted by real professionals. Visit Green's Dependable Hardware at 15220 A, Highway 43, Russellville, Alabama. You can also find them on Facebook at Green's Dependable Hardware. Give them a call at 256-331-0123.
If you like hickory smoked ribs that fall apart at the slightest pull, or barbecue shoulders that are so slow smoked each tender bite melts in your mouth, then you are going to love Baby Jack's Barbecue. Baby Jack's Barbecue in Bartlett and Arlington. Try the barbecue chicken, beef brisket sandwich, barbecue potato, it is huge, or the Baby Jack Trio, pork, turkey, or beef brisket sliders. You like wet ribs? They like dry ribs. Get one slab that has them both. Catering? Baby Jack's can feed a family or an army. Drive in, drive through, order online, or come in and set them in. Baby Jack's Barbecue in Bartlett at Highway 70 in Appling, or in Arlington at Highway 70, just a block west of 385.
Hello, my name is Christian Martinez. I'm a rising senior at Athens Bible School. My school is great because of the wonderful environment in which students can grow and flourish. We have great academics that include the University Preparatory Diploma and dual enrollment courses that lead to an associate's degree before high school graduation. All my teachers and the school's employees are Christians who are devoted to the welfare of students. We have an excellent student body, competitive sports program, and study the Bible first thing every day. It's a great place. Please consider joining us at ABS next year, or give that special child in your life the great opportunity I have.
Are you in Alabama and need questions answered by a medical professional? If so, my friends at Trinity Medical Care are proud to announce that they are offering telemedicine. With telemedicine, you can stay at home and still have your visit with the doctor. Telemedicine from Trinity Medical Care is now available Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Make your telemedicine appointment today by calling 256-489-3192. That number again, 256-489-3192. You can also follow Trinity Medical Care on Facebook.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Worley, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Hey, step up and make a difference like he does.
Hey y'all, this is Jeff Foxworthy, and you, yeah, you can make a huge difference in somebody's life. You just may not have figured out how yet, and that's why you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi, this is Maggie Peterson. I played Charlene Darling on The Andy Griffith Show, and you are listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi folks, this is Ricky Skaggs, and you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hello, I'm Gene Stallings, and this is The Mark White Show. Get off the sideline and get involved and make a difference in your community.
You are listening to The Mark White Show. My daddy is your host, Mark White. Do something good
today. Welcome to another edition of The Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment. I am your host, Mark White. Glad to have you tuning in today. Appreciate all of you for listening. And we're going to be discussing an issue that's different from what I normally do, but I'm hoping that the ultimate result is the same, that we bring unity, that we bring people together for good, and that we find common ground where we can work together. That's always the goal of The Mark White Show. If that's not being accomplished, then I'm not doing my job. I'd like to welcome Jonathan Carswell to The Mark White Show. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good afternoon. Very glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Of course, I've known of your family for many years, your dad, Harold, being a preacher, and then you yourself are a minister.
Yes, sir. A little outside of Troy, about 40 minutes from Troy in Op. Let's see, maybe southeast there, if you will. So I live in Troy, but have been the evangelist there at that congregation for a few years now.
One of the things that I noticed over the past couple of days was a series that you have come up with to try to outline to people your feelings and coming from the perspective of a black man. Me and you are both men. The way that the world has done, we have to specify our color. It would be great to be able to not have to say that, but the fact is that's the way it works. And you notice my color, I notice your color, everybody notices everybody's color. And right now, more so than ever, it's become a major issue. I said the other day, I can't change the color of my skin. I was born this way. And just as I can't become another color, you can't become another color. I want to be known as a good person. I want to be known as a Christian. I want to be known as somebody who's kind, somebody who is a giving person, and all these different qualities that have nothing to do with the color of my skin.
Yeah, and that's a really important point. And I know kind of to the first thing that you mentioned, I think one of the reasons that we do maybe say that, and like you mentioned, it's coming from my perspective when I have provided it and provided is coming from a Black man. And your point that being a man is most important is 100% true. And I think what we have is that there are cultures, you know, there are communities, there are things that I don't want to say separate us, but things that are different, maybe from one color or one race to the next race. And that's one of the wonderful things. That's one of the things that actually make us unique. So I guess kind of to me, and exactly as you said as well, you were born white, you'll always be white, and that is part of your identity. I'm Black, I'll always be Black. Being Black is part of who I am, but that's not the most important thing about me, and that shouldn't be the thing that I emphasize the most. And kind of as you said, it should really be that first and foremost that people are able to see Christ through me. I'm a Christian before I'm anything else. Because we see that's what the scriptures do emphasize, and we have the Paul specifically is going to emphasize that point there as well, that there's neither Jew nor Greek or slave nor free or male nor female or all these different things we have, that we are Christians first. And then it may be that I, as a man, it may even be that you can have more camaraderie with someone in the same region of you of a separate color than you would with someone in a different region than you are that's the same color. I may have more commonality with someone that is white that lives in Troy, Alabama, than I would with someone that's Black that lives in Los Angeles. You know, there may be some similarities, but in a way, even those things can really be connecting there to us as well. And so I think the order that we place those in is what is most important. And for me, it's going to be a Christian first, then a man, then a husband, then a father, and then, you know, all those is I am a Black man, I am a father, I am all these different things, and my race is part of those things, but hopefully that's not the most important thing. And as you mentioned, that is what has become the most important thing for many people and a point of dissension and issue, like it always has been.
It's been my experience that the best relationships that we ever form are built on mutual respect and finding common ground where we can work together. If me and Jonathan start out as enemies and that's how we build our relationship, there's not going to be much coming out of that relationship as far as good fruit. If we start with a level of friendship and love for each other and then we have some disagreement, if the relationship is built on friendship in the first place, we should be able to talk to each other and be able to discuss whatever the issue is without the hatred. Again, if the relationship is established on anger and resentment, we're not going to get very far.
Definitely.
One of the things that I think that people need to understand is trying to understand each other's experience. And that's one of the things that you have done in your series so far, is trying to share the Black experience. And even as you said, people have commonality in regions, but when you get down to the specifics of it, there is a Black experience and there's a white experience, and you've shared that, and we all need to understand the other's experience.
Definitely, and that was... I felt like I had to say that before I said anything else. And like I said in that video, one of the quotes that a teacher told me, it kind of always stuck with me, is that everybody has a story to support their opinion. And to give maybe a comparable example for us to understand that, in my experience, if you will, I've been to different Burger King. All right. It is a fast food restaurant. I like their burgers. I've been to different Burger Kings, and a lot of Burger Kings, the customer service just has not been the best. It's as long as I really get my food, it's correct, and I can get out. I say I don't care, but that's what's most important. but in comparison to Chick-fil-A, which I can't think of a time where I've really had a bad experience using it due to the customer service. And I say that to say, what if I said, well, Burger King is a rude institution? Or when I say that, you know, I can't stand Burger King, I only like their food, they're always rude, et cetera, et cetera. But Chick-fil-A is always nice. Well, those facts to me, which are facts, really are opinions that have been formulated by my own experience. Because there may be a Chick-fil-A in wherever that's very rude. It's not likely, but, and there may be a Burger King at in your city, and they're the nicest, you know, employees that you've ever had. And so when we equate that same example there to race, it can be that, you know, you've truly experienced racism as a Black person, as a white person, as a Latino, Hispanic, Asian, whatever the case is, someone was racist towards you. And therefore, if it now equates to, hey, I'm Black and a white person was racist towards me, therefore white people are racist. Or if I'm white and a Black person was racist towards me, that means Black people are racist. You're only using one story in your opinion to create an established truth in your own mind. And that's just very dangerous. And so when I'm speaking, you know, when and what in the subsequent videos, you know exactly what I've gone through. So when I say, hey, look, this is a two-way street, or hey, this is what racism looks like, or hey, this is what at least I believe to be one of the issues, you know why I'm saying that. And so that experience was to me very important to share, just to, for me really, just so I can make sure that the rest of what I'm going to say is heard on with open hearts and with honest ears, as I had to do with myself. Then it also helped me to understand why I may think a certain way. If I can remember my experiences and say that, you know, how have these experiences shaped me, whether good or whether bad.
Absolutely. One of my own personal experiences in high school was that I was bullied a lot. And to experience that, it was mostly white kids that were doing that to me. So I didn't have any real bond with people who were treating me so poorly. And I know it wasn't because of the color of my skin, but there was something about Mark that some kids just didn't like. And I was mistreated for that. And I didn't build any real bond with any particular color. If I liked you, I liked you because I liked you. If I didn't like you, it was because something about you I didn't like. And most of the time it was based on attitude and how I was treated. And I'll just tell you, there were a lot of people that I really didn't like as a kid. And I had to learn to move on and try to treat people better in spite of how they treated me. And I had a lot of resentment on myself, and there was a chip on my shoulder as I went through high school, always thinking, well, okay, this person thinks this and this of me, therefore I can't build a relationship with them. And I think part of that was maybe Granddaddy being a preacher and having the preacher's kid experience, because it is different, and I had to go through that, and that's my own personal experience, just like you have your own personal experience from school and how you were treated, and that really does form us as adults.
And, you know, and there are certain times where it's, and especially I will say during high school in particular, because one of the things that, you know, in talking to a lot of people when they mention these experiences and what they've gone through, it's so often that we go back to that time. And that's so interesting. And I guess it is because, you know, you are becoming a young adult during that time. You are starting to formulate your opinions on things, and you have a lot of different experiences and a lot of maturity that you go through from, you know, what, the age of 14 to 18. That's a very important time. And so, you know, with those experiences that you get in that time in particular, and even in the future or whatever time, we can often hold on to those things. And we hold on to those things sometimes for years. And we see that person, and me and my wife are actually talking about this before. It's like, you know, that view of that person, let's say that someone was, you know, they bullied you, right? And it can be that for 10 years, you consider that person to be a bully because of what they did at 15 and at 25, you still consider them to be a bully because that was your only interaction and it hasn't changed since then, right? You know? And it's one of those where, in a way, we just have to move on. You know, like there can be difficulty during that time. You never know what you're going through. A lot of times you don't know what other people are going through. And sometimes is that people's true character? Yeah, sure. And then other times, if you were to somehow come into contact with that person 10 years later, are they going to be the same? Maybe so. Hopefully not. I would say we lean towards that. People do mature, generally speaking. And so it's, you know, moving on from that narrative is so important. It's not saying you forget it, because that's shaped who you are. But it's saying, you know, these things do happen, but what am I going to do about them? And how am I going to let them affect me? Am I going to let it consume me and destroy me? Or am I going to use that to build myself, to become a stronger person and improve my character?
And the hope is that Mark at 13 or 14 years old is a much better person at 40, and that he's trying to do better. Sure. And that's the thing, is we're always painting this picture, and it's never going to be finished. Somebody's going to pick up the brush, and they're going to continue to work on our painting for us after we're gone. And it really depends on what we've painted on that canvas as to what's going to come out of it.
Sure, definitely so.
Right now, we're talking to Jonathan Carswell. He is sharing about his experiences, and we're talking about what has led us to this point right now where we have such chaos across the country, and there's a lot of things happening. And the thing that we have to remember is that at the end of the day, we're all here on this planet. And we're all connected in some way. And ultimately, we should be building relationships with people and not destroying those relationships. And think about the next generations that are coming up. I have a 6-year-old daughter. Do I want her to have this experience for the rest of her life where destruction and relationships can't be formed? No, I certainly don't. I hope you'll stick with us. You are listening to The Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment. And I am your host, Mark White.
A friendly smile's a tiny price to pay. Let's all do something good today. A little wink, a pat on the back, a big old hug, a little laugh. We can make a difference. All we have to do is try. Yeah, every day's a chance to change somebody else's life. Let's all do something good today.
Hi, I'm Crystal Gale, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. And one smile can make a difference. Na 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 na. Someone loves you, I do.
Hi, this is Maddie from Mama Nims.
And this is Amy. Come on out to Mama Nims and have some ribeye steaks, hamburger steaks, pond-raised catfish, whole fish or fillets, made from scratch, homemade, the best in the world ever, apple pies, fresh desserts.
Y'all come by and see us.
Thank you, Amy and Maddie. I would like to encourage you to go to Mama Nims in Anderson, Alabama, 256-800-4003. Check them out on Facebook at Mama Nims, M-A-M-A-N-E-M-S. Just like Mama's cooking, we put the love in it. Thompson Roofing and Construction is a locally owned family business serving the North Alabama and Southern Tennessee area. They are a Better Business Bureau A-plus member since 2011 and a GAF Master Elite Contractor. Give them a call at 256-952-3309 or check them out on the web at 256roofing.com. They offer free inspections.
Thompson Roofing and Construction.
It's bow time. Down here, pimento cheese is pretty much its own food group. So when fans told Bojangles to bring back our legendary spread, we did them one better. And also fired up a gooey, golden, melty, molten, pourable pimento sauce. So now you can spread it thick across your favorite biscuit, pour it over seasoned fries, stir it into mac and cheese, or dip supremes in it. Because with 4 ways to eat our pimento cheese, the recommended daily servings just became yes. It's bow time.
Is it time for a haircut? Give my friend Philip Butler at Southwind Barbershop a call. Located in the Foodland Shopping Center at 16041 Highway 72 in Rogersville, Alabama. You can call him at 256-247-5658. Make an appointment or just walk in. That's Southwind Barbershop in Rogersville, Alabama. Located in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the Alabama Music Hall of Fame honors Alabama's music achievers. You can even go into the recording studio and try out your talents as a singer. That's the Alabama Music Hall of Fame, located at 617 Highway 72 West in Tuscumbia, Alabama. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Give them a call at 256-381-4417. Check them out on the web at alamhof.org.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You
Hi, I'm Kyla Carter, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Stay unique and find a way to make a difference that doesn't just impact you, but impacts others around you.
Love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
Welcome back to The Mark White Show. I am your host, Mark White, and right now we're talking to Jonathan Carswell. We've had a good conversation. As I started out, if we built this relationship on friendship and love and concern for each other, then we're going to have a much better conversation than if I started out, hey, you're an idiot or you're stupid. Don't ever expect anybody to have a conversation where they're going to listen to your point of view if you start out calling them names. Would you have appreciated it if I called you a name at the start of the conversation, Jonathan?
Not at all.
Where would we be right now?
I have no idea. I'd probably just be listening and you know, one of those, like, well, I'll probably think it's just a waste of time, to be honest. But yeah, not a lot of progress would be had.
That's right. And one of the things we want through this show always, the goal is to have progress. And we want people who are listening right now to hear the conversation between me and you and find some things maybe that they didn't know and maybe some things that they should know so that they can go out and make a difference. I was thinking about earlier, I've got the grill going outside. The charcoal's burning. I thought, you know, if I had a huge grill, I could take it down to the square in Athens and I could go buy some hamburger meat and start cooking hamburgers right there on the square. Nobody turns down good food, and try to do something to make a difference that causes people to come together as opposed to picking up a brick. I go out and pick up a grill and some hamburger meat.
And when we're thinking about what we can do, if you will, to bring people together, I would challenge that any common goal can bring people together. Because people will come together really if they have a common enemy, you know, in a way. I was kind of reminded of a point. I was young, but to my knowledge and to what everyone has told me, those that are older than me, this was a time in which America was united, was 9/11. You know, like, America was very united. There was a time in which we put aside whatever political differences, whatever, you know, racial differences. And it was like, look, we have someone who just attacked our country. And so, therefore, we're going to unite to try and defend ourselves. And so there was unity. There was a common enemy. So, therefore, we came together with that. And that same thing is going to be present with anything. There are a lot of when we go to different points in history, and I know we're talking about kind of race in a way. So when we go back to the civil rights movement, there were blacks and whites who marched together because they had a common goal. That was to get rights for blacks at that time. At this point, we have that some people are united in protesting. Some people are united in rioting. Some people are united in looting. Some people are united in their conversations or in speaking with one another, or whatever the case is. So that's it's a two-way street, if you will. We can be united under things that we shouldn't be, and we can be united under things that we should be. And hopefully what we can understand is no matter who is presenting it, no matter who is the one contributing to the narrative, racism is something that we should unite against. I don't care what color you are. I don't care who that racist action is towards, because it goes in every single direction. So that should be our common enemy, if you will, whoever is presenting that.
We certainly saw people come together recently with COVID-19. I was sharing stories of people who were out there making a difference, and it was all people of all walks of life that were serving as first responders. There were people of all walks of life who were still going to work, who were still producing, who were still trying to keep things going, people who were working at grocery stores and all these places that we still needed these services. And to think that we went from a point where we were thanking people for what they were doing to the point where there's so much animosity. And I don't believe, Jonathan, that the animosity doesn't exist in everybody. I believe that good people yesterday are the good people today. One of the things that's been very disturbing to me was people are putting out Mr. Floyd's rap sheet. That concerns me, because as a police officer, I spent a lot of time with people who had really been cast out by society, who people didn't give them any more hope. They didn't believe in them. They didn't trust them, and they wouldn't give them the time of day. And it was upsetting to me, because I would spend time with these people because I understood that their background and their personal experiences may have led them to the point where they made these massive mistakes in society. To bring up a rap sheet as if this is a reason that it was okay and justified is certainly not. I talked to Keith Stonehart yesterday and or day before yesterday, and I said, let's think about characters in the Bible. Think about David and the crimes that he committed. He was a man after God's own heart. And Paul, what he did prior to becoming Paul in the sense that we know it, being a part of the death of Christians, we can name person after person in the scripture who had a rap sheet. We have rap sheets ourselves. They're just not publicly known.
Yeah, and that is, I think a really interesting point in all of these conversations. And I actually brought up that, you know, as you described as a rap sheet, I brought that up in my second video. And the reason that I brought that up was to simply say that's one of the things that people are talking about. So let's talk about it. All right. Here is his criminal record. People have brought that up. Now, anyone who says that this justified the action that Officer Chauvin did against him, I would say is completely wrong. Because at the same time, Officer Chauvin had a rap sheet, if you will. He had a lot of complaints that were made against him.
Yes.
As a police officer, from a variety of people, both male and female and different races. And so it's one of those where if you want to bring it up, whatever, but what is your purpose of bringing it up? Because if you're bringing it up to try and justify this, or you're bringing it up to try and justify that, or say why this is okay or this is okay, you're usually not going to get very far. And with the in and out of jail, you know, that George Floyd had, and the consistent complaints that were made against Officer Chauvin, what I take from that is this: seemingly, around 2014, from what I can tell from my research, you know, George Floyd had not had any, kind of criminal history since 2014. So about, I don't know, 5.5, 6 years or so. One of the reports is, due to his autopsy reports, that he was high on methamphetamines, and that he was also forging money, seemingly like a $20 bill, upon his encounter with Officer Chauvin. My point to that is, if that was the case, is that wrong? Yeah, sure. You know, you shouldn't be doing drugs. You shouldn't be forging money. Okay, gotcha. Hopefully that's established. But what Officer Chauvin did, I personally believe, and I think even based off the biblical definition that we have, is that that was murder. He killed him unjustifiably, which ultimately is how I kind of define murder. And so if I were to look at these two things and say, okay, now what am I really going to emphasize? Am I going to emphasize that this person might have been on drugs at the time that this happened, that 6 years ago he had a criminal record, or he was in jail? Or am I going to look at this person who just killed someone, who just took another individual's life? I don't care if Officer Chauvin did it because George Floyd was black, because he didn't like his shirt, because he thought that he was high, because he was forging a $20 bill. It does not matter. He killed this individual. Which point, which evil, if you will, am I going to emphasize? Do I recognize them both as evil? Yes, I do. But I recognize and will always recognize that this act of murder is something that probably needs to be discussed a lot more in depth, and something that is more condemnable, if you will, than what maybe the situation that George Floyd was in. That point is so important. And I do think that the biblical pattern that we have is very important to think about, because there are realities that I think we are to consider. And it's like you said, David, you know, committed murder as well. He murdered Uriah. You know, he took Bathsheba. The narrative between David and Absalom is just crazy. Like, you're literally like, David, stop. You know, like, yeah. Absalom is not trying to do anything to help you. But at the end of the day, yes, he did make those mistakes. And yes, he was still considered a man after God's own heart. But remember that God told him, hey, guess what? These mistakes are going to stay with you for the rest of your life. And to the day that David died, he was on the run, you know? So the things that do occur, sometimes our past does get dug up to try and affect our present or to affect the future. That's just maybe part of the problem that we have as human beings, you know? But at the end of the day, more so, who am I now? What am I doing now? And we have to look at that with both of these individuals as well. And look at, I think the emphasis being the present here, as opposed to the past, because both of these individuals had a bad background, if you will, if people want to say that.
If we're affected differently by that kneecap being on somebody's throat for 8 minutes because the person's a different color, then we have some heart searching to do, because anybody that has a knee on somebody's throat for 8 minutes in that manner, it should break our hearts that that is happening. I've never in my life as a police officer ever had an encounter like that, and then to act so calm about it. I still can't wrap my head around what I watched. There's times that I wish, well, I hadn't seen it, but at the same time, I needed to see it to understand what was happening to George. Again, if we see it differently because of the color of the skin that's below the kneecap, then we need to look at our heart.
Yeah, and it's one of those to where, and I definitely mentioned that kind of as well, and had to talk about that and had to think about it myself. Because my first reaction was, you know, just, this has happened again. Here we go again. Everyone's going to be mad again. Everyone's going to be divided again. I'm going to have to get off, you know, social media for a few days just because I don't want to see all of this, you know, just all over again. Instead of, I just watched somebody be murdered.
Yeah.
And if I don't care, and this is exactly as you said, put whatever race or skin color for either of those individuals.
Or criminal record.
Definitely, if Officer Chauvin was black and George Floyd was black, hopefully I'm just as mad, and vice versa. And so, you know, with that in mind, I think what we've done is, and it's, I'm not going to necessarily say it's wrong. It's okay, because we're saying that, okay, given this situation, how do we look at it? And I try and look at everything as objectively as possible. I really try and look at the whole story in every way that I can. I think that we had a police officer who had a history of aggressive behavior. And my dad was a former police officer. I know plenty of police officers. And I was like, you know, is this how you are trained to handle a situation? And all of them have said no.
Never.
Everything that I've seen, everything that I've heard, no one is trying to justify Officer Chauvin. And so my thing was, it's like, there are four people, there are four police officers that were around him. There were four police officers at the situation. How is it that four grown men could not subdue this one person? If I remember right, he was already in handcuffs, okay? So subdue this person, make sure he's cuffed, get him in the car, take him down to the precinct, follow the report, and that's all you really got to do as a police officer, you know? I don't understand how four people were not able to do that. And the reason being, in my mind, first was murder, but second, Officer Chauvin's pride is really what got in the way. And yes, we're told in the scripture how powerful pride is and how pride can erode, it can corrode, and it can destroy people. Because individuals, even in the video, were saying, hey, stop. He's, you know, you're being excessive. He can't breathe. so forth and so on. And he refused to. And it's like you said, he had that calm demeanor. Ultimately, what he was saying was, no one's going to tell me that I'm wrong in this situation.
And your dad probably knows this too. When you're out mm-hmm. on the beat, or you're on a stop, or there's any encounter that you make, there's kind of an unwritten rule that if an officer makes a move and does something, you don't question him in front of the person that you're arresting or taking in. And what my thoughts are, and I can't read any of their minds, but that unwritten rule came into play when there's a crowd of people. They're not going to turn around and say, hey, Chauvin, you need to get off his neck. You're wrong, man. They're all connected in that way. That's their community. And they're going to stick together. And I'm hoping that that's one of the things that comes out of this, Jonathan, is that that idea or that concept that there is some kind of unwritten rule that you never question an officer while he's participating if you're an officer yourself, because you just don't do that. That is something that has to be changed. And you can handle things in the right way. You could have put a hand on the shoulder and say, hey, man, it's time to get off of this gentleman. Just tell him, you know, get right up to him, say, look, we can't put up with this, man. You're doing this to this guy, and something has to change right now.
Definitely. And that's so important. And, you know, as a teacher and as an employee, one of the things, you know, that we emphasize, like if my principal has something, if I'm doing something that they don't like, don't bust into my room and roast me or sit there and call me out in front of my students because of how that's going to appear to them. There is that camaraderie that's present. The thing with that is there's always a right way to address something, because given the situation, even for the other officers, right is right and wrong is wrong. And I know everything happens very fast, but over those few minutes, I think what would have been an effective way for those officers to, and I'm going to put quotations on this, abide by their code, end quote, but still preserve and protect the rights and the laws of citizens is, hey, let me go and help you put them in the car. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's coming and saying, hey, let's go ahead and get him in the car now. Maybe he's more tired. Let's go ahead and get him in the car after a few minutes, as opposed to just letting it continue to play out. Because like I mentioned, we got to look at that from every vernacular, because one of the issues that I have, and this comes from me as a Black person in the Black community, one thing that we have in the Black community that's so detrimental to our own community is a no snitch rule. All right. Black people will watch a murder happen. They know who did it. But when officers come to say, hey, what happened? Let's try and bring people to justice. Somebody lost their lives. This is irreversible. What's said is, well, I won't snitch. I can't snitch. And so that rule is probably present in every community.
It is.
And we take that too far. And that's cost so many lives. And that's caused a lot of people to not receive the justice that they deserve. Because that's ultimately what we want. We want justice for everyone. Even as Christians, we see that it's the government's job to implore justice. That's why God, I think, has created justice. You know, we want right to be right and wrong to be wrong. And if you're wrong, you face the consequences, but they have to be just consequences, just like we want our Lord to deal justly with us.
And we need to figure out solutions to the problems. One of the things I did a couple of days ago was contact the upper level of our state government and tell them mm-hmm. that the only time that I ever took a legal class was during police academy, as far as sitting there and learning the laws. Laws change mm-hmm. and different things happen. Yeah. One of the things that we do is go and qualify with our guns every year and make sure that we're up to date on our weapons and able to shoot them. I told them one of the most important things is not whether we're qualified with the gun, but whether we're qualified with people's rights. And if they would put into place something that there was an annual check on, are you doing okay with understanding the law? Ultimately, it's not us to make it up as we go. There is a well-defined law. We either follow it or we don't. We either throw it aside or we look at it and say, this is what I'm going to abide by because I care about the rights of my fellow citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So training comes into play in that matter. There's a lot of training that can be done to keep this from happening.
That is a very important point, I think, for us to think about. And I will say, and I'll openly say that, you know, I do think that maybe there needs to be more different kind, if you will, of training for police officers. And maybe 10, 20 years ago, there didn't need to be as much training. But in our day and time, maybe there does need to be more training. And that maybe that training is more related to hand combat. Maybe it's more that, hey, how can I do everything I can to not have to use my firearm to subdue this person? And even as like my dad, like I mentioned, as a police officer, he was taught and he has told us, he's like, the only reason or the only time I'm pulling my gun out is generally speaking, if a if the criminal is going to pull their gun on me, you know. Especially if they have backup or different things. And I know that you can look at every situation, you know, differently. But that's hopefully your last resort, not your first resort. And especially if I have, if a police officer has colleagues, how to, you know, how to use teamwork to do the best they can to subdue a situation in an orderly fashion, maybe even considering, and I know that they, you know, take classes on, you know, psychology and things of that sort and how people work and all those different things. So I may not necessarily have the exact answer about maybe what needs to be trained to better protect not only our citizens, but to also better protect our officers. And, you know, having maybe those classes, maybe having opportunities for citizens to better understand the law, opportunities for officers to better understand, you know, and have better methods and more accurate methods on how to deal with things. Don't have all the answers, but do think that maybe those are conversations that we kind of need to have to see where we can continue to stop having this happen, because this has happened from a white cop to a black cop. This has happened from a black cop to other black individuals. This has happened from a white cop doing the same thing to white citizens at times. And that, no matter, again, who is in that blank, it's unjust. And so there's some kind of reform and maybe some things that we can do to try and improve that as best we can.
I'll tell you my personal experience working for one town in particular. You would have to take 12 CEU hours per year. They would just say, pick out three classes, however many hours it acquired, whatever you want to go to. You were not compelled to go to any particular training. You picked out your own classes and you had 12 hours. They were not going to fund any more than 12 hours in the town. And that was one of the things that I ran into problems. I was actually taking money out of my own pocket and going down to Clanton, Alabama, where they did hold some classes to try to get more training than I was getting through the department itself that they were willing to pay for. I know that there's small towns and other departments that are that way. They have to be, because that was my own experience. Your bigger towns tend to have more money and they can have their own training staff in the department, and some of your rural communities and maybe even sheriff's departments that are on a tighter budget, they're not that focused on what you're taking. It's just a matter of you've got to take this, you've got to have these hours, and we're going to knock it out and get it done. It can't be that way. And if it is that way, that has to change as well. And wherever the funding has to come from to make sure that, because it's worth somebody's life, I believe that. It's definitely worth not making the mistake of taking somebody's life because you didn't know what you were doing.
Yeah, definitely.
And this is a subject that gets me worked up too, Jonathan. And like I said at the start of the show, we have to learn to find ways that we can unify. I want people to come together right now. I really do. I want people to get along right now, and I want people to find common ground, but I realize that it's not as easy to do it as it is to say it. And that's problematic for me, because I'm feeling like I'm this voice in a forest that nobody can hear. And I've been trying to recognize people from all walks of life who are making a difference for the past 3 years, and then feel almost like it's being undermined because the hate is so loud and it overwhelms the good. And that's made me very discouraged. And it's been frustrating at times to have that experience, because when you work every day to try to help families who are fighting cancer and people who are fighting ALS and Rett syndrome and Down syndrome and houses burned down and people lose loved ones, and you try to be there for them and show compassion and you've done the best you can. And really, when it comes down to it, we can only help one person at a time and show one person that we care. That's what we have to build those relationships on, is love.
And that's, And that whole narrative goes to some of the things that those barriers that we have. I don't know if it's as people and just maybe as human beings, because my thing is, and maybe as an educator, so maybe I'm a little biased through this, but to me, education is really kind of the doorway for you to fix so many things, because when you know better, hopefully you will do better. When you actually know this history, or you know how this works, or you know how this functions, or you have this experience and you have this education, it's so beneficial in helping you understand things outside of yourself. And I say that to say, you know, one of the things that I think we're not willing to do a lot of times, first, is just simply talk about it. And I'm talking about not just mention the subject, but talk about it honestly. Because I think one of the problems in our country right now, and maybe it's my generation kind of thing, I'm not sure, but if I disagree with you, people will say that I hate you.
Yes.
If you know, it's like, well, I don't really think that that's true. Oh, see, he had something to say against me, or he hates me, or he doesn't have anything to do with me. No, I just disagree. And like, if we can't have a conversation and at points know that we're going to disagree and try and work to some at least commonality and understanding, then we won't get very far. And the other thing is mentioning and discussing our own difficulties, our own issues, our own problems. I know people that are racist, and they're racist simply because they were raised to be racist. I'm going to put quotations on this and say that, quote, it's not their fault, end quote. But it's one of those where, look, this is what they've known. Like, they've been told, hey, you don't do this. They've been told since they were children that, hey, black people are bad, or white people are bad. And you need to separate yourself from there. You don't need to trust any of them. You need to feed them with a long-handled spoon, or whatever we want to put into that case. And so actually admitting, like, you know, I was raised racist. I'm racist, or I have racist tendency, or I struggle with racism. How can I do better? That's completely fine. Because we all have our own struggle. Your struggle may be racism. Someone else's struggle may be self-confidence. Someone else's struggle may be, I don't know, lying, or whatever the case is. So you can fill in that blank. But admitting, like, hey, you know, I have this problem. I do struggle with this. How can I do better? That's the steps that we need to take to improve. And that's from a black person, or a white person, or whatever other race. Those are all things that we have to do if we're going to do better at least trying to solve this problem as best we can. We know that it's always going to exist. Racism has always existed. It will always exist. But we got to do the best we can, at least fight it to the death.
I'll tell you, one of the things that's bothered me for many, many years, since I was in the ninth grade, there was a girl who sat right behind me in an English class, and she was a black girl. And I had the hugest crush on her, and she made me laugh. I made her laugh. We cut up. We joked. I really liked her, but I wouldn't tell her. I never told her that I liked her. And the reason was not because of my grandparents who I lived with, but because I knew I had family members that were outside of that circle that would have a major problem with it. As a ninth grader, I knew that I couldn't tell her. In my mind, I was thinking about what would come of it if I told her and these family members found out, well, Mark likes a black girl, how that would have an effect on me and her. Yeah. As a ninth grader.
Definitely. And I mentioned in the video, I've dealt with kind of that same thing towards me there, if you will. And I'll never remember or I'll never forget, excuse me, that in one of the conversations that I had with a couple coworkers, as I talked about in the video, and they said, you know, their reasoning was family as well. I'm just like, well, you know, my parents don't like that. I've never been raised for that to be okay. And their comparison was, you know, the bluebirds don't get with the redbirds and different things of that sort. And my reaction was like, okay, now first off, that may be true for birds, but I've seen a lot of brown dogs with white dogs. It depends on the species, I guess. And human beings, hopefully, that's not binding us. But my second thing was, I was like, okay, got you. And I will say, even when it comes to honoring your father and your mother, if your father and mother say, hey, I'm not allowing you to date that person because of their race, Okay. Now, when you get out of, under, outside of their authority, what are you going to do? But okay. All right. Gotcha. They're wrong, but gotcha. I've asked them, I was like, well, what are you going to teach your kids? Because that's what matters. There's nothing that they can do that I can do about their past and about how they were raised for 16, 17, 18 years. There's nothing we can do about that. But what we do have control over is, okay, so what are you going to teach around your dinner table? What are you going to teach in the walls of your home? Are you going to teach these same things? Because if you are, now I'm going to have an issue. Or I'm going to have a bigger issue, if you will.
If Cora finds a good young man, I certainly don't want her to think that there is any reason that she shouldn't be with him. Of course, I want her to be with a Christian. I want her to raise a family that's godly. But if I have some issue and she feels like she can't date somebody because of whatever, I mean, some people are just ugly. And so if I said, well, I don't want her to date ugly people, and there's this really ugly guy, but he's a great guy, and I say, well, Cora, you don't need to go out with him. He's really ugly. You know what kind of kids that'll produce? You know, that sort of stuff. Nonsense. You know, if a person's decent and good, then I don't want her to feel like there's anybody that she couldn't come to me with and say, Daddy, this is who I am interested in.
Yeah, and that, you know, and definitely from a biblical perspective, I'll say from any perspective that should be the case. And as Christians, it should be that my first question is this a faithful Christian? That has to be my first question. My second question is this someone who, you know, is reflecting Christ? Is this someone that I do see a future with, et cetera, et cetera? And then you go from there. But if the question is, well, and I'll even say there is a reality to it, because I do want to provide a reality, right? And in the church, and I will say that me as a black person, my brothers, you know, being black, and other friends that I have that are black, that is something we've dealt with Christians. You know, interested in a young Christian girl, and she's white, and parents weren't having it, or family members weren't having it, and they did not support it or had great animosity and problems towards that. And so I know, at least for one of my friends, the girl said, look, I just don't want to put you through this, you know? And at that particular age, is like, it's just not worth it. Like, I want to be with you, but it wasn't as though they were like, you know, 24, 25 about to get married. It wasn't that. It was saying that, hey, 15, 16, look, it's just, I like you, you like me. We know that, but it's not worth it because of these constraints and what we're going to have to deal with. So maybe that's the case, and every situation is maybe different. But at the end of the day, that should not be the reason that we're not friends with someone. Shouldn't be the reason that I don't like this preacher because, well, they speak this way or they're this color, or I don't like to go to that congregation because they're predominantly black or it's all white people or whatever the case is. Anything in that narrative is going to be a major issue. And is in no way expressing the sentiment that we have shown by our Lord and throughout the scriptures.
One of the things I think about right now is the fact that even Stasha being biracial and having to be in the middle. I remember quite well, Jonathan, when I was younger, you stated this. You talked about somebody's not black enough or they're not light enough. Mm-hmm. I remember when I used to see black people would segregate themselves from light skin and dark skin.
And I'll be honest, like at times that's somewhat comedic in the black community. At times I know that's something we joke about. We'll call each other, he's like, man, you like superstars. It's like, man, we'll say you're purple sometimes or something like that. Just in a way to joke with one another. If you're really light, it's like, oh, well, she's red bone and she's yellow bone or whatever the case is. I think in generally speaking, I would say that we're saying that just in a joking way, but I will say that there are times when we actually discriminate and maybe even people as well. I'll just use black people just to relate to my experiences in my community. But we will segregate ourselves when in ourselves. It's like, nah, well, he's too black for me, or she's too light. I have heard that. And I don't know if that goes to preference or that goes to, you know, some sort of upbringing that's going to be different. I've never seen that. But it is really interesting. And I know, you know, for Stasha in particular, with her being biracial, to some black people, she was black because she had black in her. And to some white people, she was black because she had black in her, you know?
Right.
And so it was one of those where she's just saying, like, to both sides, like, I'm mixed with both. You know, and like I mentioned there in the video, for some people, Stasha was, I would challenge, the only black person that they knew, and technically speaking, she wasn't even black, you know. And so it was one of those where, you know, it's if it's a little bit, it counts, or it's enough. And
yes. As time has progressed, Jonathan, we've seen more biracial children and young people, and it's one of those things that I believe is now becoming more norm. Back in the 80s and 90s when I was growing up, there was definitely a difference,
and it's one of those, and it's kind of difficult, because from a logical just direction, you know, because we identify race by looking at someone. I've seen some people, they thought Stasha was white. I've seen some people, like, you know, they knew they were mixed, and some that thought that she was just a really light black person, you know. I couldn't help but think of, for my son, for example, he's, I guess, technically 75% black, and he's 25% white, given that I'm black and Sasha's mixed. But he looks a lot closer to her complexion than he does mine.
Right, you know? Right.
If I was just walking by, I would think that he's mixed more so than I would think that he's black. My brother and my niece and my nephew, my sister-in-law is actually from Belize, so she's Belizean. So my nephews are mixed with black and Belizean. But if I had to just pick one, they look very Latin American. You know, you would never think that, oh, man, they're biracial. They have both black and Hispanic. Maybe it's just that that part of their gene is a little bit stronger, if you will. Like that Latin American side genetics, whatever the case, is just a little bit stronger than maybe the black. I don't know. But it's one of those to where we kind of go initially by appearances, which is just kind of natural. But at the end of the day, they do have both. They're biracial, even though they may look like they're not. Or DJ's black, even though he looks like he's more mixed. Oh, it was my son. So,
my sister-in-law, she's from Jamaica. She's not from Africa. It's different. She outlines that, you know, that she's Jamaican. If you look at her, you would say, well, she's African-American, and she's actually not.
Sure, and maybe that's a whole other topic. If I were to be honest with you, because, you know, just personally, I don't really prefer the term African-American. And what solidified that for me was one of my professors in college. I guess I did hours, like I had a scholarship, so I had to do like volunteer hours and work for a professor. And I worked for him. His name was Professor Festus Inde in the English department. And, you know, we would talk a good bit, and he was from Cameroon. He spoke French because that's mainly what they speak in Cameroon. He spoke English. He had a very thick accent. And then he moved to California, and then he ended up moving to Alabama. He was African American. Literally, he was African American. He was from Africa, spoke the language that was there in Africa, then moved to America. He was African American. So if I were to say, well, I'm African American, to him, he's like, wait, what? You've lived in America your entire life, Europe. And so I said, I'm a black American, because that's really my heritage. His heritage, his culture, his upbringing is completely different because he grew up in Africa.
Right, right.
You know, in comparison to mine. And I know we go back to a lot of different things, but that's such a good point that you mentioned with that family member. A Jamaican, even though they're what we would call black, me as a black American and an African, even though we may all have the same skin color, if you will, completely different parts and completely different nationalities, you know, that are more inquisitive to our race than anything. Because a black Jamaican, a black American, and a black African, you're going to have three completely different upbringings, three completely different cultures, and very little connection, if we're being completely honest.
My great-great-grandfather came from Italy in the late 1800s. I don't call myself an Italian-American, even though he was an Italian and an American.
Sure.
But that's not me. That's three generations later. I don't call myself an Italian-American. But I know where my roots are, and I'm proud that he came from Italy and settled here to the United States. It doesn't take anything away from my thoughts and feelings about those who helped form me into who I am. But I'm completely 100% an American. I don't want to be defined as a white American. I would like to be defined as a good American, but I don't want to be defined by color in a crayon box.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just, and I agree with that. You know, like, just to a point, I'm just simply saying that, as you mentioned before, you're still white, I'm still black.
Yes.
Those are a part of the way that we do identify. Because if when we go to one of the things that we're talking about, you know, when we're talking about racism, we have to say, it's like, well, because, you know, I know a lot of people kind of use the phrase, well, I don't see color, and color really doesn't exist.
Right.
We may have good intentions.
God made it.
But that doesn't really help much, you know. And it's just like you just said, God did give mankind the ability to have different complexions, different genetic makeup, different heights, different hair colors, different eye colors, different skin colors, all those different things. He gave us differences for his purpose. And so to say that, well, I don't see those differences. Well, I mean, then you kind of need to look. Now, you should not act on those differences, but those differences are a part of us. And that's not a bad thing. And so, you know, that identification, that race, that background is so important, because I know when I went to Costa Rica twice and different things of that sort, it was kind of important for me, because when they're asking, it's like, okay, because there are Afro-Costa Ricans there in a specific place, you know, in me saying that, hey, I'm a black American, instead of saying, well, you know, we're all black, we're all in the same struggle. What an Afro-Costa Rican goes through and what I go through, maybe two different things, you know? And so it's very important to have that unity that we do as human beings, like you mentioned, first off as Christians. And that's, to me, that's going to be the crux of what we mentioned and that I discussed there in that second video. As human beings, what happened was wrong. And we have to recognize that for what it is. Now, if we want to talk about motives, we can. If you want to say that this was an example of racism, I'm not going to be the one to tell you that it wasn't. I would probably, to an extent, agree with you and probably agree with that narrative. But before we get to racism, let's come together as human beings and say, hey, this was wrong. What can we do about it? And then progress from there.
Absolutely. And finding the things that make us different bring us together, because we shouldn't be ashamed of our differences, but find where we can come together. I've really appreciated the conversation today here with you, Jonathan, and appreciate your insight and your willingness to come and have a conversation with me so that listeners can hear your perspective.
Yes, sir. I appreciate so much you having me, and do hope that all that is said has been beneficial. Hope that this platform and format that you have is really helping a lot of people. So hope that continues, and thank you for the opportunity.
How can people find your video? Is there a website, or do you have a place that you're putting them where people can watch, YouTube or anything like that?
I have put them all on Facebook. As of now, I think that Stasha has maybe put two of them on Instagram. I'll be doing the third one really right when we finish our phone call.
Okay.
But I put them on Facebook. I may actually put them on YouTube there as well. That may be wise for me to do. But as of now, they're directly on Facebook. I think that, you know, a good few people have shared. So you can either look up my name to see them, or maybe someone that has shared it. And I'm more than willing, if you want to share it, then please do, or comment, or if you have questions, disagreements, if you want to comment or message me in Messenger or text or call me, whatever the case, I would love to speak to anyone. And help in any way that I can.
Well, this conversation is being heard on Sunday, so the third one is now done, so people can listen to the third installment now. So that's good, and I'll get with you if you upload it to other places, and I'll let people know.
Okay, perfect.
Folks, we've been talking to Jonathan Carswell. I hope that you listen to his message and that it has an effect on you, a positive effect, because what I want ultimately is us to come together and find where we can make a difference together. That is the goal of the Mark White Show. This is not intended to upset anybody. This is not intended to make anybody uncomfortable. But the fact is, if we can address these issues head on, we're going to find an easier path to coming together. And that is the goal of The Mark White Show. And I hope that I've accomplished that today. I hope you'll listen next time. You have been listening to The Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment. And I am your host, Mark White. Talking about a hero. Special kind of hero, hero. No ordinary hero. Talking about a hero. Special kind of hero.
Hey, y'all, this is T. Graham Brown, and you're listening to my friend Mark White right here on The Mark White Show. Great guy. If you want to make a difference in your life, trust in God and never doubt, for surely He will see you out. Make a difference in somebody's life if you can only see me now.